Hi, my name is Nick Singh. I am the head of the Smart Grid Center of Excellence at Eskom Research, Testing and Development that is based here in Johannesburg. I lead a very enthusiastic group of engineers and scientists that work within the smart grid domain and look at next horizon technologies that can impact our future.
Welcome to the ESI Africa podcast, brought to you by your trusted power and energy multimedia journal. You can download this and all other episodes on esi-africa.com/podcasts. Let's get into today's conversation.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Nicolette Pomba-Fanzel, your host for what is going to be an informative episode as we uncover Eskom's perspective and plans for the microgrid market. Eskom is South Africa's state-owned power utility. Here to discuss this topic with me is Nick Singh, the head of Smart Grid Center of Excellence, Transmission and Distribution Delivery at Eskom Research, Testing and Development. Thank you so much for joining us, Nick.
Absolute pleasure to be here today, Nicolette.
So for those who are not familiar with a microgrid, Nick, can we please start with a basic description of what a microgrid is and what defines this technology?
Okay, so a microgrid essentially is a smaller version of the national grid that we see. So in most cases, especially today, with the reduction in prices of renewables and battery energy storage, you could replicate power using renewable energy. And what a microgrid does is harnesses renewable energy in the form of wind or solar and produces electricity in that fashion. It's very different from our conventional way of generating electricity via coal-powered fire stations, which are, you know, predominantly based here in Mpumalanga, and then, you know, redistributing that energy throughout the country. Whereas with microgrids, they can be centrally located and fit for purpose. The fact that the renewable prices have really come down in terms of PV panels and battery energy storage and inverters makes this a very attractive solution, because you can now produce power locally opposed to producing power using conventional methods such as coal in your coal-powered power stations, and then obviously transmitting that power over, you know, hundreds and thousands of kilometers of line. So microgrids are essentially smaller networks that can generate and distribute power in a local vicinity. Nicolette.
We've seen quite a few microgrids spring to life in unique ways in African countries. But here in South Africa, let's start with what Eskom is up to and who conceptualized the utilities microgrid program and how far back does this planning go?
Okay, yeah. So it obviously has been quite a few years that this has been, you know, in the making. I think my center of excellence and my engineers, obviously led by, you know, the team, looked into upcoming trends and technologies that will impact Eskom business. This program started very, very early as 2005, where the Smart Grid Center of Excellence was created. And then the microgrid program was officially started in 2015. Here at Eskom Research, Testing and Development. And the first smart rural microgrid, and that's a differentiator. It's a smart rural microgrid, right? And the word smart has to be emphasized, was commissioned in August 2017 in a small farming community in Ficksburg, next in the Free State. So that was the first. It was a demonstration plant. And, you know, as good engineers, we had the opportunity to tweak and understand the landscape and what's required. And that was almost like the playing ground to develop what we have now in commercial operation.
Nick, as an engineer, it must be very exciting for you to be involved in this. But did you personally ever think that Eskom would go down the mini grid route?
Now, as engineers, you know, technology is forefront. I'm sure you guys are aware, Eskom, turned 100 years last year. And, obviously there's a huge transition to renewable energy, which is now very clearly set on the utility's path. We have the just energy transition, which is now a transition to move to more renewable and more sustainable future. I would like to emphasize that there was always support from, Eskom executives for this research, even in the early days, right? But there's one thing to do research, and it's very seldom that research moves into full execution and rollout. And microgrids are now fully integrated within Eskom's strategy. And this is something that we as a smart grid team here at Research, Testing and Development are very proud of, especially myself. It was a lot of work, lots of heads, and lots of time to make this possible. And I think it's a huge achievement. And it's very rewarding as an engineer to see an idea move into a fully grown product is very satisfying. And I think we're all very, very proud of that.
Yes, I've also noticed that, and our subscribers will have seen this transition taking place over the years, as well as by Eskom and other African countries. But Nick, what is the objective of the Eskom microgrid program, and how does this fit into the greater strategy of the organization?
Yeah, well, I think Eskom is still bound to the mandate in terms of access to electricity or universal access to electricity. That's a country mandate. And electrification is a method used to fulfill this mandate. So Eskom has made tremendous strides in increasing the electrification rate since democracy. And, it was in the low 80s or sub 80s prior this. And now we achieving in the higher 90s. But even though this has happened, there's still an excess of 4 million people in the country without access to electricity, and that's wrong. So this is mainly due to very sparsely populated communities that are far from the grid, as well as extremely difficult terrain and conditions to overcome when laying down this infrastructure. This has a huge impact, you would imagine, on the cost of these installations. So this is where microgrids come in at a fraction of the cost compared to conventional reticulation, which can definitely be used in your far to reach outskirt areas, where you don't need to lay down any of that infrastructure.
The cost factor is always an issue. So adding to this, what challenges did Eskom have to deal with to get this microgrid program off the ground?
Yeah, so, firstly, there was a technical challenge that was put out to the team that we had to overcome. We had to engineer a solution that was, cost-effective, reliable, modular, sustainable. And the technology that we chose, had to be future-proofed because there was no time to go back and redesign this at a later stage. And it also needed to accommodate any new technology that had to come. So it was quite a tall order. And, it also had to be designed to interface with legacy systems. When I say legacy systems, it's systems that already exist. It can be systems within the network, billing systems, etc. And, funding was also a challenge, considering the financial status of the utility. However, the technology gained the interest of many funders. I mean, when you see the product firsthand and you understand what level of engineering has been put into it, it's very easy to entice funding. And there's many funders that have, gained interest on this, and this has kickstarted this journey. So while we got the technology mapped, as well as the potential for funding, there's still the regulatory and policy challenges, within the country. And these still need to be adapted to accommodate this technology. And this is currently being undertaken by other divisions within Eskom. So that's out of my research mandate that goes into policy and regulation space. But they're working on that presently.
No, we won't go too much into regulatory and policy considerations. This is covered quite extensively on the ESI Africa website. So let's move on to what current and planned projects are underway in the ESCOM microgrid program. And for those eager to know when a microgrid is coming to the area, how does ESCOM choose the specific locations?
So we have our distribution division, right? So distribution division is mandated and responsible for electrifying the distribution area. So there's various sites around the country that were identified by our ESCOM distribution business. And this was purely based on location of that particular site, the population density of that site, the cost to electrify these sites. And they were selected to be part of this microgrid program. So I'll give an example, Nicolette. So Swartkop Dam is a site very, very far in the Northern Cape. And it's a fantastic example of this application. So, you know, it's close to 200 kilometers up from Upington, very close to the Namibia border. It would have cost in the hundreds of millions to get close to 200 kilometers of conventional 132 kV, 22 kV lines, substations, et cetera, to power this community of, you know, 50 to 60 homes. And we managed to achieve that by installing microgrids in this location, which were done in extremely quick time. It was literally done within a month. And it's been running flawlessly from December last year. The year before. So it's running for over a year now. And this is just an example, you know, in terms of what ESCOM is doing to get power to remote locations.
Mm-hmm. And that is testament to the decision that was taken to actually initiate this program. So what has ESCOM learned about creating community buy-in to set up the project, working on a pilot microgrid project in the Lindoch community in the Western Cape and the Ficksburg project in the Eastern Cape? Sorry, in the Free State.
So those two projects actually started in 2015. They were the two pilots that were run. The Lindoch project is in Stellenbosch. It's a very unique community that has got residential type layout with individual homes that had rooftop PV installed with individual battery storage per house. And we did a second project in parallel, which was in the Free State in Ficksburg. And that's your conventional microgrid with a centralized plant that now reticulates power to the community. For both these plants, community buy-in and ownership are core and key, you know, to any successful implementation, or if you want longevity from these plants. So for the Ficksburg example, it included very close collaboration with the community that was powered. There was a lot of stakeholder engagement, there was a lot of education, there was a lot of information sharing, and the community was closely involved in the construction of the plant. And they still play a crucial part today in the maintenance and safeguarding of this infrastructure. And I think that's core, you know, to any of these demonstrations. So social impact, obviously, you know, you will positively impact these communities and grow these communities by introducing power. And they see this as a benefit. So safeguarding that infrastructure is crucial to maintain that capability. And they do this. And I think that's the one of the big pain points that we've learned, you know, from this, in terms of whenever you want to do any implementation, make sure that your community and your stakeholder engagement is done correctly.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like there is definitely an element of community involvement in setting up the microgrid. So, and adding to this, is there a skills development or training component attached to each project?
Yes, 100%. So when we do projects, when ESCOM does projects, whether it's by us personally or via a engineer, you know, procurement commission, EPC contractor, there's very clear rules in terms of community engagement and, upskilling and training. The project team consulted with the community and scheduled the construction time that most benefited this community. They're a farming community. And we made sure that the work was done during the off-peak period, to maximize utilization of that community in the project. There were also quite a few individuals that were trained in terms of, as technicians to look at the technical aspects of the plant. And that was giving back to the community as well. And these are the things. It has to be a win-win situation where the community benefits, and we can safeguard the infrastructure and make sure that the skills are built in these areas.
Right, and obviously adjusting as you go along the way in terms of the environment that you are working in. So beyond that, who provides operational and asset maintenance of the microgrid long term?
So as I mentioned, the community helps, in terms of maintenance on the plant, but obviously not at the higher technical level. Mind you that I emphasize that these are smart microgrids. So the technology that has been deployed here is extremely intelligent. The plant has got self-healing and black start capabilities. So I'll just, explain those two. So self-healing means that the plant can basically correct any problem that it might have. And it'll rectify the problem, isolate the problem, and start up the rest of the plant, instead of losing the entire infrastructure. If there's catastrophic failure, it can even black start itself. In other words, from absolutely every system being off, it can resurrect itself and become functional again. We also have got remote engineering capabilities where we have full eyes on this plant as such. We can dial into the control systems. We can see status of the plant. The plant can also push messages or alarms to us. So it's very interactive. Currently, this is remotely managed by my team, and distribution representatives within the business are now trying to take over these systems and integrate it into distribution business. This has been migrated, and as you can imagine, all these migrations take some time. But the future view is of a distribution system operator, DSO, right, being formed. And these are to manage these smaller generation plants.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of ownership, what business entity ultimately owns the physical assets of the microgrid? Does this fall under maybe distribution or the generation business component of ESCOM?
Yeah, well, it's interesting that if you break down the word, distributed generation, right, both words are included in that term. And my opinion is that it's based on the size. And in this case, it'll fall within the distribution area of supply. But I think generation is playing a crucial part in the microgrid program right now. Kumati Power Station, which is run by generation, is responsible for the manufacturing of these containerized microgrids under the repowering and repurposing initiatives that are now happening at Kumati Power Station. I believe that there's still, where policy and regulation needs to play a part. And as you said, that's a discussion for another day. Mm-hmm. But I think the lines are blurred now. It's not as clear, in terms of whether it's generation or distribution. And I think there's going to be some policy changes that needs to happen in that space.
So what are the other types of projects that can be brought into this microgrid program? For example, do you only use this for those far-flung communities where it isn't cost-effective to expand the conventional grid? And what about electric vehicle charging infrastructure or even emergency power capacity?
Yeah, no, I think, when it comes to that, it's very versatile. The containerized microgrid was designed for the worst case application, and that is an off-grid application. You can imagine with off-grid, you're not connected to a grid. You have a finite amount of renewable energy that you can harness, and how you effectively manage that energy happens, right? So, however, with the very same technology can be used in a grid-tied or on-grid application. And this forms new functions in terms of, assisting the grid with instabilities or harmonics or transients or where it needs support. Electric vehicles are on the horizon. They've started. We've seen the influx of them in the country. And vehicle charging will have a huge impact on our existing grid. So I believe that microgrids can effectively act like a damper between the electric vehicle charging infrastructure and the main grid. So it'll sit in between there. And by doing that, it can take up the loads of the electric cars when charging and then gradually recharge from the main grid when required. So it's not a direct impact. And I think this will significantly reduce the impact of electric vehicles on the grid if we are to use it this way.
Thank you so much, Nick. Let's just continue a bit more on the technology. So how does Eskom size a project, or do you only work on a one size fits all kind of a microgrid?
Yeah, so what we did is from our learnings on the demonstration and pilots, we then put that into a containerized microgrid. So it's a 12-meter shipping container that has that is being mass manufactured right now. We see these containers everywhere. You know, every truck will have a 12-meter container at the back of it. So the idea was to use this container and design the system within this container such that it can be transported anywhere in the country without any special permits. You know, the size of the container makes it very easy to set down and establish a microgrid. These containers can be daisy chained, so they can be linked up to each other, right? And but that's on the technology side. The application of this is something else. So the microgrids are sized based on the usage of the customer. So you go in there with a survey to conduct and identify, you know, what type of appliances and load profiles that are generated. And then we use this and we set up these containerized microgrids to meet these load profiles. So appropriate load limits are programmed to meet supply demand of these communities as a worst case scenario. So that way we ensure that the community will always have power, even if it is load limited. And load limiting is very different from load shedding. You know, so you will still give your basic lights, refrigeration, charging of cell phones, television, and you will still be able to power these communities.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like we are learning a lot about how to put up a microgrid and what you can then evolve into. So how does the Eskom microgrid program differ from other African microgrid programs? We have seen quite a few being developed in our neighboring countries as well.
Yes. Yeah. So I think as I explained, you know, in terms of the definition of a microgrid, it's generating energy. I think the differentiator with the Eskom system is that the control system is, first of all, was developed in-house by Eskom engineers. And, you know, it plays a crucial part in terms of how it manages the system. So when we look at how electrification is done, distribution does standard reticulation within the Eskom electrification program. And we don't want to change that. The reason for this is that when we deploy these microgrids, we connect it to existing conventional reticulation. So you'll have a pole top with your smart meter and comes down to the distribution box within the house. The only difference is where you would normally have a transformer, you now have a microgrid. And the reason for this is that when electricity, you know, finally reached these outskirt areas, the microgrids can be replaced for the transformer. And that same infrastructure, the micro can be redeployed to a further point on the network. That way you're making use, you know, full use of this asset. And I think, you know, having visibility on the plant, being able to do load control, be able to do forecasting, this is what makes this program so different.
So, Nick, earlier you mentioned the Kumati Power Station, and we are coming to the end of our podcast now. So, as a last question, what came first, the idea to establish a microgrid manufacturing component at the Kumati Repowering and Repurposing Project, or the microgrid program?
Well, that's the easy one. The program actually came first. So the microgrid program was well established. And I think, but you know, the Komati Repowering Initiative was the perfect place to incorporate the manufacturing of these units. Part of the Komati plan and the JET program is repowering and repurposing. So the repowering initiatives is changing the conventional power station to renewables using wind and, you know, battery energy storage and solar, but also repurposing. So taking parts of that power station that's not being used for, you know, for anything right now and repurposing it to do other things. And this is where there's a fully fledged production capability that's now at Komati Power Station, where we will be mass manufacturing these microgrids. And you can imagine by doing that, you're now creating value chains, you know, from first the component perspective in terms of the PV panels and batteries and steel and whatever it may be, but also creating new jobs in manufacturing and uplifting and reskilling. And then last but not least, you know, these products go and uplift communities. So social and economic upliftment in the sector is also achieved by doing this program. So these are all the boxes that we're trying to tick, you know, merge the technology with the sector, with the economy, socially try to uplift, create jobs, train, you know, and I think that's ultimately what we're trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm. Nick, thank you so much for answering our questions and spending time with us today. From our conversation, it's definitely evident to me that Eskom is making good progress in the microgrid space.
Yeah, no, 100%, Nicola. Thank you for the opportunity once again. And hopefully we can chat soon if there's any progress.
And I'd also like to thank our listeners for tuning in. Until the next episode, do take care and stay safe. Goodbye for now.
You have been listening to an ESI Africa podcast. For the latest news, reports, and interviews on power, energy, and related industries, visit the ESI Africa website on esi-africa.com or follow us on social media. Until next time, thank you for tuning in.